11-2437, McArdle versus Peoria School District. So we'll wait till everyone leaves.
I had a chance to say hello to my old friend Steve Jokic.
What?
I had a chance to say hello to my old friend Steve Jokic, who argued the case.
It's nice. All right, Mr. Stico, hello.
Well, from the legislative process to a First Amendment public employee case, Judge Rosner, it's been a while. Judge Coleman, it's nice to appear before you. And Judge Mannion, I seem I've drawn you on several panels recently. It's good to be back. I view it as it's amazing how the draw works. It's been a long time with Judge Rosner. Judge Mim described this.
Are you reminding me of my age? What are you doing?
With respect, Your Honor, myself, it beats the alternative. Judge Mim described this when we had an oral argument. This is a most unusual factual pattern involving First Amendment public employee rights. Julie McArdle was the principal, hired as principal at Lindbergh Middle School. Her predecessor became her supervisor. Mary Davis was the predecessor. Things were a mess when she came in with some things that Mary Davis had been doing that were improper. We don't claim that was the protected speech part. Where it starts is on October 26th, a Sunday. Julie McArdle receives a call from Discover Card about Lindbergh Middle School's behind on payments on a credit card.
Which brings me to my first thought, which is why should a school principal not be expected to report misuse of a credit card issued in the school's name?
Well, for one, this law of the state of Illinois says they don't have to. They ruled in a criminal case that there's no obligation to do so. And we're looking, supposedly, the First Amendment exists to protect legitimate state interests. Well, how can you apply a federal test of the legitimate state interests, which the state of Illinois disclaims?
Yeah, but there, you know, I mean, you take a look at that McGrill decision, and, you know, as I understand it, the issue is whether the principal had a legal obligation to report the crime to the prosecuting authorities. You know, not whether she would be expected to report the crime to officials of the school district as part of her duties as principal.
Well, my response with respect, Your Honor, is how can we determine someone's obligations other than the legal obligations under the employment contract? Are we...
You know, what evidence would suggest that she was airing the credit card issue and the other concerns as a matter of public concern other than as a private grievance?
Well, every circuit that considered the issue is that I have always had a problem with motive, and especially when you're talking about this, is that certainly there's a public concern issue, and the courts of appeals that have considered it said whatever the employee's motive, the public's got a right to know about public thefts.
Well, just to follow up on that a little bit, because I'm curious about a comment that's, who's ever briefed this is a big one, a red one. On page 45, it says there's a clear link between McArdle's personal interest and her allegations, both temporarily and factually. After being told of her impending termination, she told Broderick that she was sending a letter that they should read before deciding to terminate her. Now, that seems to be the first of her putting forward, because the letter followed up, I guess, had all this stuff, of her having any, we'll call it, concern.
Well, she didn't know about it.
Huh?
That's the point of the case, and that's the red herring.
I just wonder, is that accurate?
Well, yes, and that's the red herring in the case, because this is a prior restraint case. She didn't know, and that letter was done after she written with my counsel, is I'm the one who discovered the theft. She didn't know there was a theft. I mean, I'm the one who looked at the credit cards and said, this woman's a thief. And look at these credit cards and the usage, and it's clear she is.
Was that when you decided you're going to send this letter?
And it just, yes.
It's just coincidental that they told her she wasn't going to keep her job?
Well, her employment hearing was coming up. Her board meeting, that was on a Thursday evening about 8 or 10 o'clock.
She seems to imply, at least in this comment, if it's accurate, that, hey, I got something on her that you better know about before you think about brooming me.
Well, Ashley, shouldn't the board have known about it?
I
think what Judge Mannion is setting forth is that her letter to Broderick and the others suggests that she's raising these concerns in opposition to her pending dismissal, rather than to air a matter of public concern.
Well, if we totally ignore Fairley versus Andrews, I think the case that says state actors aren't applicable to the Garcetti case is that the whole claim that Judge Mim didn't consider and this didn't consider is that's not the First Amendment claim that I asserted. Is what happened from Thursday to Monday. I thought we had a duty to bring this to their attention and look at her motives and maybe you make the right decision. The First Amendment claim I brought when I discovered, incredibly, that no one in the school district, even after seeing all these credit cards, believed it happened, is that Mary Davis was setting Julie McArdle up to be fired to suppress her speech,
that must have been what happened.
Well, the evidence of that is the any way you approve any employment action is, one, the knowledge, the email that's written back, very interesting, where she lies about the off-the-books credit card. The evaluation was set up where Julie McArdle couldn't make it, had no input. She got a poor evaluation. She was disciplined in February, had, contrary to district policy, on a complaint of a student. She never, Davis never identified the student or parents, so McArdle had a right to answer, and she's got a remedy plan, which is serious for teachers, based on something she never had a chance to reply to. She was the sole instigating factor in the discharge. She spoke most, the superintendent deferred her at the hearing. The superintendent did say on April 6th, when Mary Davis took three parents to him, I need to go look at this. Well, the poor man was a great public servant. He closed two schools, and it's always difficult. He never got around to it. And so, she took the Fifth Amendment.
But this is all internal.
What?
This is all internal, what's going on with her school. All I'm trying to look at is that when we're talking about matters of public concern but that's when the possibility of the First Amendment comes in. When you're talking about this internal stuff, which maybe should have been investigated, and I don't see any place where she alleges that she was somehow threatened by Davis. There's a lot of hindsight that looks at what could have been going on, but there doesn't seem to be anything about a threat or something. You better keep your mouth shut or something like that.
Well, that's the whole point of Fairley. You said, in Judge Easterbrook's opinion, he said this is the quintessential First Amendment case. I'm going to set somebody up to be fired to shut her up. Right. And that's what she did. That's the claim Judge Mim didn't hear.
Other than the fact that Ms. Davis arranged for three parents to meet with Mr. Hinton in April, what evidence is there that she was orchestrating or instigating all of the various complaints by teachers and parents?
Well,
I mean, there were a lot of complaints.
12 or so people testified. 4 of them were favorable. I mean, I also look at it, Judge Rovner, as nothing good happens when you see a principal. She's the supervisor. She's there to do. I mean, if we look at it realistically, one of the complaints was, well, you didn't go to Six Flags. We went to the Museum of Science and Industry, and we get into all this petty stuff, and then we take the deposition of the person. She said, well, how'd it go at the Museum of Science and Industry? Oh, quite well. Things like that. I mean, your encounter with a principal in a school is usually something bad's happening, or you don't. The student and parents go through.
And so you're saying that none of the statements that were made by the parents, that nothing was untrue that was presented. I mean, you may have thought it was petty, or it was picky, or it was subjective, but was anything untrue? I mean, any of the statements?
There was a lot. I never had a ruling on the objections. There's a lot of hearsay going on, and it's so petty that to go out and say, well, we had some complaints about this principal. What places wouldn't you? Isn't that what Mary Davis is supposed to do, is supervise and back her principal and try and look at what's going on? And the law is that when she's motivated to suppress her speech, she violates the First Amendment. And that's, what's the best evidence of that? Well, silence and the other objective evidence they give you. Now, please don't accept the red herring. Thursday to Monday in April, what went on there had nothing to do with the claim. If I could reserve some time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mr. Nicholas?
Good morning, counsel. The plaintiff in this case seems to predicate her entire claim on the fact that Mary Davis took the Fifth Amendment. And that per se, by taking the Fifth Amendment, he's entitled to a trial on the merits of this case. He ignores, however, the very basic fact that he was confronted on every issue he raised in his complaint by contrary testimony in the depositions before that were presented. He presented no evidence of any kind that would suggest that the allegations of the complaint had any foundation. In
you
fact,
referring to he, I mean, you know,
she,
on her behalf.
On her behalf.
Like
she,
that.
I'm
okay.
Sorry. She established no clear-cut violation of her First Amendment rights. She seeks to assert for the fact that in some fashion, she had no obligation to report a theft. I find it inconceivable that a public sector employee who discovered theft had no obligation to report it to their superior. That, to me, is a ludicrous statement on its face. Counsel has made reference to no duty to report based upon a situation that occurred in the trial court of Peoria County, in which the facts of that particular case are totally distinguishable from the facts in this case. An employee's duties to report a theft are obligatory as a part of their fundamental job responsibility. And when did she report it? Only after being told that, in fact, she was going to be terminated at the end of the year. I think we also have to understand that while there has been a lot of allegations that she committed theft, there is no evidence in the record that she committed theft. Now, she also claimed that she was retaliated against.
What's the status of the criminal case? I understand the trial was scheduled to go forward in January.
As a matter of fact, Your Honor, there was a decision this past Wednesday in which a plea bargain was entered into. She pled guilty to an obstruction of justice charge with regard to providing information to the police department. She did not plead guilty. All of the felony charges were dropped. And so there is no underlying decision with regard to the felony charges that were filed against her.
What do you mean she did not plead guilty? She pled guilty to
something.
She
pled guilty to the obstruction of justice charge, which is a misdemeanor. She did not plead guilty to any of the felony charges. The case was disposed of on that plea agreement Wednesday.
And has there been sentencing?
There was sentencing. She was given probation. I think she also was obligated to make a payment to the school district. Off the top of my head, I don't remember all of it. I do remember she was given probation, however, for the obstruction of justice charge.
Was there somebody, what was it, $8,000 or something, obligation?
I'm sorry?
What was the obligation on the credit card amount?
$4,000, give or take.
Somebody's going to come up with that, or maybe they just didn't. It doesn't matter, but that's the point.
That's correct.
That's where we are.
Right.
But my point before was, and then apparently it's accurate, that this is when this first came up, is when she was notified she was going to be terminated. And that then she brought this to the attention of, what is his name?
Of the school authorities.
Yeah, Broderick, I guess.
That's correct. There was nothing the entire school year on any of her complaints that were ever brought to the attention of any of the administrators. And she had repeated conversations with these administrators during the course of the school year on a variety of topics. So it's not as though she could not have talked to Hinton or to any of the other administrators who were above Mary Davis. She just didn't. And she just waited until the very end.
Well, these
end.
Conversations or whatever you're talking about were with regard to her performance, I presume, and corrective action and things. And I assume she debated whether or not she really wasn't. Yeah, that was basically what these conversations were.
Well, they related to issues with regard to her evaluation, with regard to the performance program that was to be implemented. She complained about it, and it was let go forward, and it was testified that this was not disciplined by the administrators. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Chatterton.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You know, before you even start, can you help me with this? Was there any school district rule or guideline indicating that principals were expected to report possible criminal activity or misuse of school funds, in particular to their superiors?
There was no written rule or anything that stated that. I think Ken Hinton testified that it was his expectation that if administrators, principals became aware of things, that they would report them. I asked Julie McArdle about that during her deposition, and she conceded that if she learned of a theft or some misconduct by one of the teachers, that she would have reported that to her superior, Mary Davis. So I think that is consistent with the fairly common understanding that Mr. Nicholas expressed, that if you have an employee that learns of misconduct, you would, within your organization, you would expect them to report that to you. And I think that's a fairly reasonable and common expectation.
It's safe to assume that Davis didn't report anything.
Regarding her own alleged misconduct? Yes. I think that's a
or
safe.
Or somebody else's.
none that's of issue in the case that I'm aware of.
So whatever obligation would extend to her as well, if we're really talking about that.
Correct. Sure. Correct.
Ms. McArdle did say she felt obliged to raise the credit card issue with the police if the school board, the school district didn't do so. Ultimately, she did go to the police. Does that fact support her contention that she was speaking as a citizen on a matter of public concern?
No, it does not, because she raised this primarily and first in writing to her bosses at the District 150 and indicated to them, I think you should consider whether this needs to be reported to the police, which they did. And then after they reported it to the police, Ms. McArdle went down to the police station and said, I'd like to make a report about this. And the police initially told her, we're already aware of it. The district reported it. You don't need to, do this. We've got it covered. And she was very insistent and I think eventually talked to a sergeant. He said, fine, I'll take a report. But the primary thrust of her reporting was, as Judge Manion indicated, it was internal, and it was only made after Tom Broderick contacted her and let her know that she wasn't going to have a job with the district next year. Then she met with her attorney, she called in sick the next day, and made these extensive allegations against Ms. Davis. I do want to correct one of the things that came up during Mr. Stiegel's statements. The meeting that the PTO officers had with Ken Hinton was not arranged by Mary Davis. One of the PTO officers, Reva Schutman, testified that she called Ken Hinton's office and made the arrangements for that meeting. So even that was not something that was orchestrated by Mary Davis. There's no evidence that I'm aware of that anything was orchestrated in any sense by Mary Davis. As you pointed out, Your Honor, there's no testimony that Mary Davis went to Julie McArdle and said, if you tell anybody about this, I'm going to have you fired. The prior restraint argument doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. They went ahead, they decided they were going to fire her, and they did. I mean, that was the surest way to get her to talk.
Well, you know, when the school board met to consider whether she should be discharged, Ms. Davis was permitted to participate in that meeting. And even though she was excused once the topic turned to the allegations concerning her misconduct, couldn't a fact finder infer that Ms. Davis's presence alone poisoned the discussion of whether Ms. McArdle should be terminated?
No, I don't believe so. I mean, if you look at the transcript of that meeting, her role in that was fairly minor. It was really Ken Hinton.
Not the point. The point is she's sitting there.
The plaintiff has to show that, but for her speech, she would have been terminated or would have been some action against her. And I don't think they can show that. I mean, the district has been very clear, throughout this that they would have made the same decision regardless of whether these allegations came up against Mary Davis. They received, as you noticed, many complaints from parents, and those didn't come all through Mary Davis. They came directly to Ken Hinton, the PTO presidents. He got letters from other parents. He got letters from staff. As a matter of fact, there was a teacher who came to him on the day of the board meeting and spoke with him at his office, which also shows that he was accessible. The board members testified that, we had parents coming to us who were complaining. So there was, a lot of information coming from sources other than Mary Davis, and it was consistent and, as you indicated, truthful. There's no suggestion that any of it was untruthful.
One other thing. Is there any evidence, did anybody bring anything up about the possibility that Davis steered complainants to other administrators?
There's no evidence of that I'm aware of, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Stickle, you used up all your time, but I am going to give you a couple of two extra minutes.
Thank you so much. Julie McArdle did not know of this until I told her, April 23rd. Record is undisputed. It's also
know of
amazing.
What? She's going to get fired?
What?
Know of what?
Of that there was a theft.
Okay.
She brought in all these other things, and I said, the woman's a thief. When I saw the credit card things.
She must have had some thoughts about this if she's bringing you all this stuff.
Her testimony was, and it was true, Your Honor, she didn't have any idea, and it's confirmed by the school board, the superintendent. Nobody knew the significance of this off-the-book credit card.
And why would she have brought that to you?
She brought it as an aside and said, I was wondering about this credit card, and that's when I said, the woman's a thief.
But she is wondering about this.
When she saw me on April 23rd, she wrote the email, right? The relevant time is on April 23rd when I said she's a thief. I grant you, if when she called Mary Davis's response to her email about a month and a half later and the false response about the credit card, if she suspected she's a thief and she's holding out, this is a different case. But the woman did not know. And this student activity fund, maybe I can explain it in a little context. It's nickels and dimes, dollars charged for basketball games, candy, and things like this. $4,000 was an extraordinary amount to have in there. It's usually $1,000 to $2,000. There was a review done by the accountants. Nobody could audit these. Of course, now they've overreacted and they're doing all sorts of things with this. The restitution amount, which I'll put in, was $15,000. So these accounts are an aside. Everything else was controlled by the district.
What do you mean by the restitution amount was $15,000?
Yeah, I put it, that's what it was.
It's in the plea agreement?
Yeah. I'm going to file it. I didn't think it fair to file it yesterday when I got in town yesterday. But what I'd say is this is just an aside, this student activities account. the receipts come in, it's kept, and it's not a major thing on the principal or anybody else's. So I argued below, and Judge Mim never ruled, is the best evidence of what her ordinary duties were what the superintendent, the human resources director, and all the board did when I gave them the actual evidence and the $4,000 payment of the off-the-books Discover card from the Student Activities Fund to benefit Davis. Nobody thought she was a thief until she was indicted, including an MBA in finance. I mean, this was truly by the wayside. And, yeah, we're talking about major thefts, but this is just totally under the best evidence of what her ordinary duties were is it was amazing to me that's why I say it's so unusual. Because nobody knew she's a thief, even with the evidence.
Well, you spotted it in a hurry anyway.
What?
You spotted it in a hurry, apparently.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can read. I've been a federal practitioner for years. I can look at a off-the-books credit card, and I can see Student Activity Fund ledger, and I got the check the next day and said she's a thief. Look at what's on the credit card. She's got cash advances. She's got Peoria Toyota, American Girl, interest over, you know, late payment fees. She's a thief. You present that to the board, you present that to the superintendent, nobody thought she was. So is McCardle really that stupid and out of it? I mean, she just didn't know.
Thank you so much. Thanks to all of our lawyers, and the case will be taken.